From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Joining us on School Talks this week will be Dr. Nick Vitti, Superintendent of Detroit Public Schools Community District. We'll also be joined by Jonathan Rand, the author of the Michigan Chillers and American Chillers series. Be a great conversation with a world-famous author. And to round out the program, I'm going to give you some of my own thoughts on how to keep your children occupied this summer in a productive way that makes the return to school in the fall that much better. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks is Dr. Nikolai Vitti, the superintendent of Detroit Public Schools and the Detroit Community School District. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So it's no secret that you are one of the longest tenured superintendents in the history of Detroit schools. I think you're either the probably the second longest
second longest superintendent,
which speaks volumes to your leadership capacity and stability. And part of what I wanted to talk to you today about is, given the successes the school district has had recently, how that has been able to be achieved through the strategic planning. And I'm curious, what would you characterize are some of the major components of the strategic plan that has really helped the district's turnaround?
Yeah, well, I thank you for that. I think my longevity is linked to my leadership, but also my teams and the school board. You know, a lot of people always focus their energy on a superintendent, as you know, but the board plays such a critical role in supporting and holding a superintendent accountable. And I think it has to be balanced. It's about accountability, but also support. And we've had sustainability and continuity with the school board. We've had some changes here or there, but the core board has been there, and the value of the board has been there to focus on policy and governance, not the day-to-day operation of the district. And, you know, from the beginning has empowered me, but also held me accountable and supported me in the way. But to your question, the longevity is also due to a focus on the strategic plan. A lot of districts, you can just go to work every day and just deal with what's in front of you, and that's an eight-hour job plus. But I think if you're trying to reform a system, you have to have a plan, and you have to implement it with fidelity and make adjustments as you move forward. So when I started 8 years ago, we were very intentional about engaging all stakeholders on what's working, what's not, and what do we do differently. And we took all of that, all those feedback sessions, all the surveys and everything, and created what was then called Blueprint 2020, which has been updated now three or four times, but very intentional about what's our vision, what's our mission, what are our core values, and at the core, what are our priorities. And the priorities have focused on trying to recruit and retain great talent, improving student achievement, being responsible with our funds, and just being good stewards of our dollars, focusing on the whole child and transformative culture. That essentially has been the core of what we've done. And again, we have metrics connected to that. That's on my evaluation. We've rolled down that to schools and principals. And because we've stayed focused on those priorities over the years, I think we've seen the improvement that the district didn't see years before.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to follow up on one thing you mentioned. In the early part of my career in Warren, it seemed like one out of three or four teachers I came across at one point worked in Detroit Public Schools. And I am fascinated to know more about the approach that you used to close that vacancy gap, which really is the sort of the bread and butter of your success. And how did you go about it, and how is it going now?
Yeah, I've been very, you know, unapologetic in saying that the core of our work happens at the classroom. You know, that's the epicenter of the magic that happens in schools. But you can't talk about a quality public education, you can't talk about quality, you know, education if you don't have certified teachers. And when I started as superintendent, one of the first questions the board asked is, you know, we got 400, 500 teacher vacancies. How are you going to fill that gap? And I said, we need a plan to do that. And so what the plan was, one, you know, engaging HR. And unfortunately, a lot of the folks in HR at that time didn't have a vision, you know, didn't have a plan to recruit teachers. In fact, many said, Dr. Vitti, we can't recruit teachers to Detroit. And, you know, we might be able to keep them if they're here. They've been here for a while, but we can't recruit them. Can't do it. And I said, well, that's the first problem is the mindset. So changed, I would say, 95% of staff in HR, just new people with different skill set, different mindset. And then, you know, it started with compensation. You know, I think we have to be real with the idea that salaries matter, and people with four-year degrees are limited in number, as we know, in this country, and those going in education are even more limited. So, you know, over the last 8 years, we've increased teacher salary on average by about $30,000. Our beginning teachers, when I started, were at $38,000. You know, now they're at $53,000, $55,000 going into next year. Our most veteran teachers were at $68,000. Now they're at $93,000. And that's not including, you know, one-time bonuses and, you know, even some performance pay that we have offering our in retention bonuses. So that's been the greatest investment. But beyond that, you know, we've worked with our principals. We have surveys that we do with our teachers to ask them how's professional development, how's the culture at the school, how are we dealing with discipline. We've done a better job of lowering class sizes. We're investing in our facilities with minimal dollars that we have, one-time money that we have. But I do think a lot of our staff sees the difference around facilities, class size. We now have curriculum materials that are on grade level. We are providing more professional development and working with our principals to not only be managers of buildings, but to be, you know, managers of people. You know, how do you problem solve through conflict? How do you give the right kind of balance of feedback and support? How do we deal with discipline problems? All things that, you know, we've created better systems for and tried to develop principles to be better supportive. And then lastly, you know, part of that work has to do with working with the DFT, Detroit Federation of Teachers, as partners, not as enemies. Mm-hmm. And so we don't always agree, but we agree to disagree sometimes on both sides, and we actively communicate and collaborate. Mm-hmm. And I think they would say they don't always agree with me. I don't always agree with them, but we've reconciled our differences most times than not because we're professional and we want the same thing, which are a fully staffed group of teachers and students excelling.
Mm-hmm. We're currently with Dr. Nicolae Vitti, a superintendent of schools here in Detroit. Among the many achievements that you talk about, I've come to appreciate your focus on culture. And for our School Talks listeners, somehow your team at different intervals has managed to remove 35 schools from the state closure list and have also made some historic gains in literacy, math, and achievement on the SAT. The one thing that really intrigues me and I'd like to know more about is what factors do you attribute the 14% increase in graduation rates over the last 4 years? Because after all, the purpose of school is to graduate, and to increase it by 14 percentage points speaks volumes to your leadership. How did you go about doing that?
Well, it started with an audit, which showed that the curriculum that, unfortunately, the district was using was below grade level. You know, during the days of emergency management, there wasn't a lot of investment in professional development curriculum. And we found our teachers were using curriculum that was not aligned to those new national standards. They were often piecemealing the curriculum with things they found online or that they felt more comfortable using. And, you know, the research is clear, even if a student is below grade level, they should be accessing at grade level content, at least in whole group instruction. So changing the curriculum to be at standard, to be at grade level from pre-K to 12th grade in all core subjects was, I think, the best investment we made and showed the greatest dividends in improving student engagement and better supporting our teachers. Beyond that, It came with, and you know, changing a lot of our principles, investing a lot in principal development. So we actually use the evaluation to improve instruction, and then all of our schools identified either what we called master teachers, now lead teachers, in literacy and math to support teachers during the day in common planning and in modeling instruction. We put mentors connected to new teachers to support them, a monitoring system. You know, we now know throughout the year how students are doing. And so rather than guessing how they're going to do at the end of the year, we know through the beginning of the year, mid-year, how they're performing. And we've invested heavily in what we call academic interventionists. These are college degree individuals, not certified, but they are trained to work with students one-on-one in small group, because we can't put the burden on just teachers to catch all these students up to being where they should be. And so, you know, a combination of all those things have led to improving student achievement. We have way more to go, you know, and I think our greatest challenge with accelerating beyond the improvement we've seen is chronic absenteeism, which, you know, I'll probably talk about that later. But going back to graduation rates, I think improving instruction, improving engagement. We also survey our students. We ask them, you know, do you feel loved, challenged, and prepared? And we use that data to help our teachers better engage our kids, our leaders in our buildings engaging kids so that they come to school often, but they feel love, challenge, prepared. They're going to perform at higher levels. But all that plus a very precise data tracking system from 9th grade to 12th grade. You know, we didn't have that. We now have a clear dashboard that principals can see what kids are off track, what courses do they still need to graduate, and teams are constantly problem solving on course recovery, what courses they need to take, calling parents. We run after school, summer school programs to just make sure that kids are where they should be at the end of 4 years. And the data shows that it's just about the monitoring, the engagement that our kids need more of than maybe the average kid outside of the city.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Nicolai Vitti, superintendent of schools here in Detroit, what you've outlined for us really is a whole bunch of common sense things in terms of trusting your data, verifying, and really following up. And much like the city at large, the improvement in Detroit Public Schools is certainly a testament to your leadership. And I want to thank you for joining us today on School Talks. There's much more to talk about. I'm sure I'll have you on again in the future. But as always, keep up the good work, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Coming up after a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with the world-famous author, Jonathan Rand. Stay right there. This is 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is Michigan Chillers author Jonathan Rand. Welcome to the program, Mr. Rand.
Hey, thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. For our School Talks listeners, whether you're a parent or a student or an educator, you probably are very much aware of Jonathan Rand and the number of children's books that he has written. I certainly know him from having visited schools in our district back when I was a superintendent, and I'm very much aware of you having traveled to, I think, thousands of schools across Michigan and the Midwest, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So I think a good place to start is you have a pretty interesting career prior to beginning to author children's books, and could you tell us a bit about how you were what you were doing prior to writing books and how it sort of led to you becoming an author?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, I was going to my dream going through college, through school, had always been to work in the conservation field. I was always outdoors, and I loved being outside. So I started going to college for natural resources technology, and just kind of getting some basic classes. And it wasn't really working out. And of course, you know, I wound up needing money, and I wound up applying at a radio station. I knew nothing about it. I didn't know, you know, anything. I'd never been on the radio before. And, but I got hired, and I found out later from my boss that I had an ability that a lot of people didn't have. And I was able to read very well and write, and that was essentially why I was hired. They needed somebody that was not only just going to be on the radio to, you know, play music, but to also write radio commercials. And that was something that I absolutely fell in love with. I just had so much fun. I would sit in this little production studio, and I would come up with these crazy, wild ideas. And essentially what I was doing is telling stories. I would create stories for advertisers, and I loved it. And that kind of one thing led to another, and I left the radio airwaves and kind of made a career of writing and producing these radio commercials. And finally, I've always been a voracious reader, and one day I'm like, I keep getting these ideas, and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write a book. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just thought it'd be a fun thing to do, and it was. I started out and just never looked back.
How did you first come up with the idea for the Michigan Chiller series?
Yeah, I started off with a couple of adult fiction novels, one called St. Helene, which is a haunted lighthouse story about an island west of the Mackinac Bridge. And then another book called Ferocity, which is kind of a science fiction thriller about a giant muskellunge that lives in a northern Michigan lake and eats people. So kind of like a freshwater Jaws. But while I had been writing that book, the fictitious town that I came up with for the city was called Coorville, and I wanted to come up with a metaphor. Like if you took everything about Michigan, you took the clean water and the fresh air and the forests, and you put it in a bottle, and you put it on a grocery store shelf and you sold it, what would you call it? What would be the name? And I started thinking about different ideas. Well, the name I went with in the book was called a Coorville Cooler. But one of the names I came up with was a Michigan Chiller. And that name kind of struck me. And I asked my wife, I said, you know, doesn't this sound cool? It sounds like a series of kids' books. And I started to brainstorm different ideas about different towns and cities, and I started thinking, you know, I could write different things about these different creatures and monsters in these cities, and if it takes off from there, I could, you know, expand into American Chillers, and that's where kind of it all began with that book called Ferocity.
We're currently chatting with Michigan Chillers and American Chillers author Jonathan Rand. So when you started writing these books, they started as Michigan Chillers books first, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
And then tell us about how did it expand to the American Chillers?
Yeah, I started with the first book was called Mayhem on Mackinac Island, and that was released in the spring of 2000. Followed it up real closely with Terror Stalks Traverse City, Poltergeist of Petoskey. I had started, by that point, I'd started visiting schools, conducting assemblies at elementary schools, mostly, I mean, right around Michigan. But the interesting thing was I was getting more and more letters, not only from kids in Michigan, but from kids in different states, you know, that had, you know, from, you know, mostly around the Midwest. But they would write me letters, and they were very kind, and they were great, too, because a lot of these kids were like, hey, I read your book, and, you know, why don't you write a book about my state? I live in this great state, and you can write about this or this. And, you know, and they would come up with their own titles. And that was then, and I had been thinking about that all along, but it was really kind of cool to get these great ideas from these kids. And then, so what I wound up doing is I wrote 10 books in the the Michigan Chiller series. And when I finished that 10th book, I immediately started working on the American Chiller series. So I kind of put the Michigan Chiller series on hold until I got a few books out in the American Chiller series. Yeah.
So have you ever heard from a fan or someone who would want you to write a book about another country?
Oh yeah. In fact, I get that almost, I would say almost daily in the letters and emails that I get. I get kids that, hey, you should do like, you know, World Chillers, you know, and they'll send me titles. You know, the other day I got one, it was Terrible Turkeys of Turkey. And, you know, that'd be kind of fun to do. So, but I'm really, it really is, it's kind of a fun concept, but I'm not quite finished with the American Chillers series.
So as a kid, what kinds of books did you like to read? And do you think that what you read as a kid has affected the kind of work that you're doing today?
Yeah, in a huge way. I started reading, you know, a lot of the books that I think most kids did, you know, Clifford the Big Red Dog, and one of my favorite books was Where the Wild Things Are. I would read that over and over, and those expanded into Beverly Cleary had a great series about a kid named Henry Huggins, and I love the Henry Huggins stories, but I always was gravitating towards you know, something of a spooky, kind of a scary ghost story, haunted house type nature. And I was, you know, I was the kid who would check out the book at the library, and I would take it home, and I thought I was being sneaky, but I had taken one of my dad's flashlights from the drawer in the kitchen, and I hid it under the pillow. And this went on for a couple of years, and I really thought I was getting away with something. But I found out later, of course, that, you know, my parents knew all along. And of course, that was, I would just climb under the covers, pull the sheets up over my head. I'd open up my book, grab my flashlight, and I would scare myself silly. And sometimes I'd be like so frightened, I'm like, I'm never going to do this again. You know, I'm never going to read a scary book like this again. And the next night, I was doing the exact same thing. And so when I really started to think about writing stories, and this was as an adult, I read just about everything these days, but I've always gravitated towards that psychological suspense thriller type horror. And so when I started writing, that was just kind of something that just seemed to fit the bill.
Mr. Jonathan Rand, if you'll stay with us, we're going to take a break for a word from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about all things American and Michigan chillers. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. We're chatting with author Jonathan Rand. So when you're not writing your own books, what do you like to read nowadays?
Oh, man, you know, and I read a lot more nonfiction these days than I used to. I really, for some reason, I've kind of gravitated towards that. But I also read, I still read a lot of the, you know, what I would consider like grandmaster classics of horror, science fiction, Robert Heinlein. Ray Bradbury was one of my all-time favorites growing up. I loved Dandelion Wine and Something Wicked This Way Comes, along with his other short stories. And he's just got an enormous amount of work. Stephen King was obviously a very big influence and still a favorite to this day. So I think if it's well written, I will read anything.
You know, I appreciate that. Something I do as an adult from time to time is I'll go back and read a book that was assigned to me either in high school or maybe even college and take from it something totally different for obvious reasons than when you were 15 years old. And I think about that canon of literature that is currently in public schools and how kids receive it now compared to reading it, you know, some 40 years later as an adult. And it really is an interesting connection and understanding of what you thought it meant back then to what it means now, given you have an entire life experience behind you. It's really fascinating. So back to the fans. Let me ask you, if you could recall, what would you consider as one of the most memorable fan interactions you've had since you started writing the series? I saw one young boy had questioned why you have different names, pseudonyms, and whatnot. But what would you characterize as one of your most memorable fan interactions, whether in writing or in person?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question, and it's a very recent recent instance. It was in November. I was at the Macomb Reads Festival, and it was a beautiful day. I was outside signing books. There was a long line, and there was a kid who had been waiting there probably for about an hour to get his book signed. And when he got up to me, his mom, he looked a little sheepish, and his mom said, "Well, go ahead and ask him your question." And he kind of looked at me, and he said, "How do you make your books like so scary and adventurous and thrilling, but you don't have any gore or blood or anything in them?" And I took that as probably the biggest compliment I've ever had. Because I talk about that when I conduct writing classes with kids, and I talk about, you know, unfortunately, we're in a violent world, but if you read the books in the Michigan Chillers and the American Chillers series, nobody dies. There's no blood, a protagonist does not pull out a knife or a gun to solve an issue. There's always a creative solution to this. And I say that the challenge to us as writers, whether you're young or someone older like myself, is to really create a story. Can you create a suspenseful story and weave that real tight plot to raise those hackles up on the back of somebody's neck, and not use that type of violence? I think unfortunately it's kind of a cop out, And I try to steer kids and say, hey, look, try this angle first. Try this avenue and see what you can do. So when that young man asked me that question about how I can write scary books and not make them bloody and gory, that was I just took that as the biggest compliment I think I've ever received.
We're currently chatting with author Jonathan Rand. You know, Mr. Rand, you mentioned something rather intriguing, that none of your work contains the typical gore of horror movies or books or whatnot, but yet you're still able to maintain that suspense. What's interesting about that perspective is it reminds me of a comedian who can be really funny without using profanity. Anyone can create blood and gore in a book or a movie with, like you said, guns, knives, machetes, you know, all those classic gory films and books and whatnot. But to create suspense is much like a comedian who can make you laugh hysterically without using any profanity, and in many cases, not having it be at someone else's expense. And it's a pretty interesting observation. So one last question for you. What advice would you have, or what advice could you provide to a young writer who wants to create their own spooky stories or get into creative writing? What kind of advice would you give them?
Sure. Well, two things, and they're very simple, but I'm going to expand on them just a little bit. And that is number one, to read every day. And when I say read every day, I caution kids. I say, don't just read my books. You know, if you like my books, I'm thrilled. I'm really happy. But there are so many other incredible authors that you will appreciate, especially as you grow. Spend time reading different authors, and then spend time every single day writing, even if it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Writing is like anything else. You know, the more you do it, and that combination of reading other authors allows you to kind of help begin creating your own author's voice. It creates your own unique perspective, your unique story. And those are the two big things. I mean, I know it sounds real simple, but I don't think that a lot of people take it to heart, that it really is. Writing and reading is, you know, that profession of being an author is a lot of hard work. It's very persistent, and you've got to be diligent.
And one final thought, if you could tell our listeners about the store you have up in Michigan.
Sure, yeah, it's called Chillermania. We've been here for, 20 years now. This is our 20th year. We're right off I-75, exit 313, just north of Indian River, so if you're on your way to Mackinac. But it's really, really fun. It's all my books. We've got posters, hats. All summer long, we're open 7 days a week. I'm here usually. My wife is here. Our two dogs are here. We welcome families. It's usually busy all day long, and it is just it's a lot of fun. So it's all about books. It's all about reading. It's all about literacy. So if you're headed north this summer on vacation, it's exit 313. It's called Chillermania.
I love it. And, you know, 13 is the unlucky number, thinking of suspense and thriller. So it's only fitting that you would be at that exit. So, Jonathan Rand, I really sincerely appreciate you taking the time to join us here on School Talks. Keep up the great work and best of luck to you.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Coming up after the break, I'm going to give you some thoughts about how to keep your children occupied this summer in a productive way that actually helps them be ready for school in the fall. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on School Talks is Dr. Joseph Trobau, a.k.a. Dr. T, from Fountain Elementary in Roseville Schools. Welcome to the program, Dr. T.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy. I appreciate it. Very excited to be on with you guys today, and also so great to see you sharing different stories from different schools throughout Michigan. So
I appreciate that.
Encouraging, yeah.
You know, your nickname, Dr. T, that's somewhat common in elementary schools for children to come up with a nickname for their teacher, especially if their last name is difficult to pronounce. And I'm curious, what is the etymology in your case of Dr. T?
So I was a classroom teacher for a really long time. I was Mr. T back then, and if you are a kid of the 80s, you know who I'm talking about. So mohawk, chains, and so I always thought that was kind of funny. And the parents really understood, the parents of the students I taught understood that. So it was kind of our inside joke. And so from Mr. T, I just went to Dr. T. And it's I think it's just easier to say than my last name, Trobaugh. So.
What a great story. I didn't know that it was once Mr. T. So the fact that it migrated to doctor, I assume after you earned your degree, makes perfect sense. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I think a neat place for us to start on the program today is you are also an alumnus of Fountain Elementary, where you're now the principal. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy full circle moment. So I grew up two blocks away. This is my childhood school. Actually, my parents still live two blocks away, so I see them quite often now. But I just have a lot of fond memories of being a Fountain student. So, you know, being able to walk to school, to, you know, come to the school as a hub, not only for my educational journey, but also throughout the summers. We had a baseball diamond in the back, and that's where all the kids hung out. So I have a ton of fond memories. And this being my first principal job, you know, I would take any principal job that I received very serious. However, being this school and considering my school, you know, I understand what it's like to be here. So I have a unique perspective and connection. You know, I've walked through these halls. I've come through these doors. I've been around amazing teachers. I've been around the community. So it allows me really to give back to the community that raised me and just to show kids, right, that, you know, success doesn't necessarily always mean leaving, but, you know, sometimes coming back and lifting others up with you, you know. So it's been a cool full circle moment. Just memories flood through every time I drive through the neighborhood.
Sure, full circle indeed. I myself can relate because I was a high school teacher at Southlake High School where I attended high school, and I was one of those students who was gone for 4 years and came right back and ended up working with many of my former teachers. And I remember it was really difficult to start calling them by their first name as opposed to Mr. or Mrs. And the challenge that posed to me. So, you know, given your longevity in the community, I'm sure you have a unique perspective. You mentioned the term that the school is a hub, and I think you probably have an extra special or unique perspective on how the entire community surrounds itself with the school and the activities. And I understand Fountain Elementary is participating in the Building Healthy Communities program. And I'm curious, given your longevity there and leading the school now, how are students and families responding to the focus on health and wellness there?
Well, families have been tremendous. And they've brought a level of enthusiasm, which has been really rewarding. You know, for students, bringing an awareness to, like, health and wellness, like, kids are willing to try new things. So when we talk about building healthy communities, you know, it's not only just food. I think most people think of food, but we have daily movement breaks in the classrooms. We have school wellness clubs. Kids are trying new, you know, different types of food during these taste tests, which are pretty funny to see, where kids, you know, they try different things and they might get a thumbs up or kind of a squeamish look to them. But, you know, when they're involved in this, they start to feel engaged and feel excited about it. And so the best thing I've seen is the students have taken ownership of health, right, in small but meaningful ways.
So on the other side of the coin, the support you're providing families, I think about, and I know you know this well, absenteeism is a big concern among all schools, frankly. And I'm curious, given your commitment to making Fountain the hub of the community, what steps are you taking there to improve student attendance? And more importantly, how do you continue to engage parents?
Yeah, so you nailed it. Chronic absenteeism is something we're taking very serious in as a problem, not only in the state, but across our country. So I try to, you know, come from a place with empathy, but also building relationships. So I'm almost in the end of my second year here at Fountain. My first year was learning a lot about the community and just making connections. You know, a lot of the families and students didn't know who I was back in the day. They knew I went here, but, you know, I'm always out front at arrival and dismissal, making those positive communications and connections every day. So it's earning the trust of the parents, but then also to say, like, hey, this is, absenteeism is tied to academic outcomes, but it's also, tied to the social-emotional growth of the students, because when they miss, they do miss work, but they do miss those moments in the classroom with the teacher and their classmates, and they're missing out on that social connection too. So one of those things is, reaching out with empathy too, to figure out what's going on. And in most cases, when we start to see a kid missing school, we try to, nip it before it becomes a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And so we'll call out to families and say, hey, what's going on? So it's not really trying to judge parents, but say, hey, what's going on? How can we help? Do you understand, some parents didn't even understand you had to call their kids in, to say, hey, it's excused. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to build, some awareness around that. But we've also look at data too. We look at it intentionally and say, hey, how do we intervene early? We also have started a bunch of recognition programs. So we celebrate good and improve attendance. We recognize perfect attendance, but we also look at progress too. So we want to make sure kids are motivated and they're proud to be here. So it starts with relationships, really.
Yep. And we've known for a long time that education is not a procedure, but rather a relationship. So you're certainly demonstrating that there at Fountain Elementary. Dr. Joseph Trobaugh, a.k.a. Dr. T., I want to thank you for joining us on the program today and shining a really nice bright light on Fountain Elementary in Roseville Schools. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it, Dr. Livernois.
Thank you, sir. With summer break just around the corner, I'd like to let our School Talks listeners know that during the summer months, we'll be showcasing the great opportunities for students in our schools, whether it's an athletic camp, a fine arts camp, the traditional band camp. There is a lot going on in the summer that helps students get ready for the next school year, and I'll be spending some time showcasing the great work in our schools. I also will take some time and share with you the great work that's being done by our sponsors of School Talks in our schools so that they are ready for students in the fall. That will do it for this edition of School Talks. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us on the program today. Dr. Nick Vitti, Superintendent of Detroit Public Schools Community District, world-famous author Jonathan Rann, author of the Michigan Chillers and American Chillers series for kids, and Dr. Joseph Trobaugh, Principal at Fountain Elementary in Roseville Community Schools. That's all the time we have for today, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.